Hi, this is Jane on Friday, August 21st, reading the Charlestown Patriot Bridge, August 21st edition. Park Square building offices poised for conversion to apartments. An 11-story, block-long office building at 31 St. James Street in the Back Bay, known as the Park Square Building, is now poised to be redeveloped into 490 apartments, the Boston Globe first reported last week. New York-based Van Barton Group has proposed what would become Boston's largest office-to-residential conversion project, entailing the redevelopment of the 540,000-square-foot property located at St. James Street between Arlington and Berkeley Streets. If approved, the project would reportedly cost as much as $410 million. The building, which is once the largest in New England, has reportedly struggled financially since the pandemic and was sold in April at foreclosure for $95 million to LNR Partners, a Miami-based subsidiary of commercial real estate giant Starwood Property Trust. Existing ground floor tenants, including French furniture retailer Roche Bobois and the restaurant Fire and Ice, intend to continue occupying 30,000 square feet of ground floor retail space, according to the Globe, although nearly two dozen office tenants are expected to vacate their respective spaces by the end of the year. Upcoming film screening at Copley BPL highlights voters' rights ahead of 2026 midterms. Ahead of the 2026 midterm elections, True North Action Alliance Boston, a dual chapter of Indivisible and Progressive Mass, continues its four-part documentary and community discussion series, The Good Trouble Film Series, with a screening of the 2025 documentary, Democracy Under Siege, on Thursday, September 10th, from 5 to 8 p.m., at Robb Hall at the Copley Square branch of the Boston Public Library. Directed by Oscar and Emmy-nominated filmmaker Laura Nix, the film traces the roots of today's threats to American democracy, according to a press release, via commentary from historian Heather Cox Richardson and Representative Jamie Raskin, among others. Nix will join the post-film discussion virtually, alongside panelist Jaron Chang, President and CEO of Partners in Democracy. Additional panelists to be announced. The film screening and discussion series began on July 17th with a virtual screening of the recent documentary Love, Joy, and Power, Tools for Liberation, which was directed by Emmy winner Darisha Kai and follows Black Voters Matter Fund co-founders Cliff Albright, April England Albright, and Latasha Brown as they travel the country mobilizing Black communities ahead of the 2020 election. A screening of and discussion on Light Waters, a documentary written and directed by veteran filmmaker Bobby Roth that profiles a diverse group of 37 Americans as they confront the problem of saving democracy in the face of fascism, followed on August 20th at the Copley branch of the Boston Public Library. The Good Trouble film series will conclude with a screening of Minnesota Neighbors, Not in Our Town, on a yet-to-be-determined date in late October at WBUR City Space. The new documentary by Patrice O'Neill, founder of the Not in Our Town movement, shows how Twin Cities residents came together to protect their neighbors during the intense ICE enforcement campaign in winter 2025-2026. Ordinary citizens overcame their differences and fear to defend their immigrant neighbors, winning the 2026 JFK Profile in Courage Award. The October screening follows a well-received rough-cut preview in April, presented by True North at Suffolk Law School. Producer-director O'Neill will join the post-film discussion. additional panelists, and details to be announced. Both of the upcoming film screenings and discussions are free and open to the public, though seating is limited, so community members are encouraged to RSVP in advance. More information is available at truenorthboston.org. Boston Athenaeum announces free Community Day open house on September 19th. The Boston Athenaeum invites the Boston community to its fourth annual Community Day open house on Saturday, September 19th, welcoming all residents, visitors, families, and friends across the city to explore the landmark historic building at 10.5 Beacon Street from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event is free and open to everyone. Guests will have the opportunity to view rare items from the Athenaeum's special collection, share stunning views of the Granary Burial Ground, Boston Public Garden, and State House, enjoy live music performances from local artists, and immerse themselves in the architectural beauty of the 12 floors housing over 500,000 books. Scheduled programming throughout the day includes live music on multiple floors, hands-on crafts for all ages, interactive reading discussion group prompts, and story times in the Athenaeum's Children's Library. The free admission includes access to the two current first-floor exhibitions at the Boston Athenaeum, Where's Boston, 50 Years Later, revisiting the 1970s photography of Boston photographer Constantine Manos, and Imagined Nation, an America 250 installation, featured historical artifacts centered around American themes of citizenship and democracy. Our annual Community Day is one of the best ways for our neighbors to experience the joy of discovery that the Boston Athenaeum ignites in our members, said Leah Rosofsky, director of the Boston Athenaeum. The Athenaeum has something for everyone in the community, and we are so happy to open our iconic red doors to welcome them. Community Day at the Boston Athenaeum was launched in celebration of the 2022 renovation and expansion of the historic library, museum, and cultural center. The project expanded the institution's physical footprint and strengthened its ability to host our collections, events, and its members and the public. Founded in 1807, the Boston Athenaeum is a unique combination of library, museum, and cultural center. One of the country's oldest and most distinguished independent libraries, the Athenaeum's circulating collection includes over 500,000 books, from works published in the 1800s to the latest bestsellers. Special collections include active research holdings of significant works of art. Members, visitors, and the community enjoy a year-round calendar of cultural programs. The Athenaeum is a member-supported, not-for-profit institution that everyone is invited to join. Learn more at bostonathenaeum.org. City of Boston earns 4-star certified welcoming designation. Mayor Michelle Wu, the Mayor's Office for Immigrant Advancement, or MOIA, and Welcoming America announced that the City of Boston has earned a 4-star certified welcoming designation from Welcoming America, recognizing Boston as a national leader in creating policies, programs, and practices that support immigrant inclusion and belonging. Boston has been shaped by generations of immigrants seeking a better future and working hard to build the city we enjoy today, said Mayor Michelle Wu. I'm proud of the work of our Office for Immigrant Advancement, community partners, and neighborhood and cultural leaders to expand civic engagement, support our communities, and make Boston a city where everyone belongs. Through its certified welcoming process, Boston met the criteria across all 7 areas of the welcoming standard, Welcoming America's roadmap for building inclusive communities, government and community leadership, equitable access, civic engagement, connected communities, education, economic development, and safe communities. This recognition builds on MOIA's ongoing efforts through its City of Belonging, You Belong Here initiative, a citywide campaign that encourages every resident to feel welcome, valued, and empowered to contribute to Boston's future. The designation reflects more than symbolic commitment. Boston has built the systems, programs, and partnerships that help longtime residents and newcomers alike participate and thrive. Through the annual Welcoming Week celebration in September, MOIA also continues its citywide outreach efforts to inform residents and share resources so that every neighbor is inspired to support welcoming neighborhoods. Boston's strength comes from the people who call the city home, including our immigrant neighbors who contribute to every part of our civic, cultural, and economic life, said Chief of Equity and Inclusion Mary Angeli Solis. This designation reflects our continued commitment to creating a city where language access, economic opportunity, and belongings are embedded into how we serve residents. As part of the certification process, MOIA led a comprehensive review of city policies, programs, and practices related to immigrant inclusion. The process highlighted Boston's investments in language access, immigrant leadership development, legal services, workforce development, community engagement, and partnerships with organizations serving immigrant residents. Achieving this 4-star certified welcoming status is the result of a collaborative effort across city government and with immigrant communities who shared their experiences, priorities, and vision for Boston's future, said Courtney White, Interim Executive Director of the Mayor's Office for Immigrant Advancement. This recognition celebrates the progress we have made while also strengthening our commitment to continue building a city where every immigrant resident can access resources, participate fully, and feel a true sense of belonging. Boston's immigrant communities represent the diversity, resilience, and innovation that make the city stronger. Through programs and initiatives including immigrant leadership programs, community grants, legal services partnerships, citizenship support, and community engagement efforts, MOIA works to advance equity and expand opportunities for immigrant residents. Boston's work behind this designation across city government, community organizations, and immigrant residents who shaped it is what welcoming looks like in practice, said Daniel Valdez, Deputy Director of Welcoming America. It's fitting that this comes in America's 250th year, here in the birthplace of the American Revolution. We're proud to recognize Boston as the first certified welcoming community in Massachusetts and excited to see what comes next. The 4-star certified welcoming designation from Welcoming America joins a growing list of recognitions and milestones that reflect how Boston is a home for everyone. Among these accomplishments, MOIA efforts include expanding access to immigration legal services by supporting trusted community organizations that provide free and low-cost legal assistance, supporting English for Speakers of Other Languages programs that help immigrant residents build language skills, pursue educational opportunities, and strengthen economic mobility, launching and expanding Immigrants Lead Boston, a leadership program that has trained immigrant residents from across Boston's neighborhoods to become community leaders, creating opportunities for immigrant youth through the Immigrant Youth Advancement Program, which connects young residents with career exploration, mentorship, leadership development, and workforce opportunities. Strengthening community engagement through initiatives such as community office hours, where MOIA brings city resources directly into neighborhoods at Boston Public Library branches. Advancing the city's language access efforts to help residents access government services, information, and resources regardless of the language they speak. From September 10th to the 19th, Welcoming Week in Boston will include art, health, education, and economic programming, as well as virtual and in-person events to further promote city services and the seven areas of the Welcoming Standard. To see the schedule of events, visit www.boston.gov/welcoming. DiDomenico votes to save ratepayers' money on energy costs. Senator Sal DiDomenico and his colleagues in the Massachusetts Senate passed energy affordability legislation that is projected to deliver billions in savings to ratepayers across the Commonwealth while keeping Massachusetts on track to meet its climate goals. The bill, S-3143, an act to save people money, repair the climate, and grow the economy, tackles rising energy costs head-on by cutting unnecessary fees, evening out price spikes that hit households during high-demand months, cracking down on predatory sales practices by energy suppliers, and steering the state away from expensive infrastructure projects that don't deliver value for taxpayers. Energy bills have been too high in recent years, and for people across my district, especially those with lower income, this can force impossible decisions on people, like paying for the heat or paying for groceries. I am thrilled to move this legislation forward that will bring down energy costs and accelerate our state's transition to renewable energy with less pollution, said Senator Sal DiDomenico. There has been a false narrative that we can either lower ratepayer bills or advance clean energy, when the reality has always been that you need one to do the other. This bill does exactly that. By marrying efficiency programs and clean energy development with customer protections and cutting red tape, we are continuing our state's climate commitments and ensuring electricity and heat is affordable for everyone. The legislation targets the biggest cost drivers that Massachusetts residents face on their monthly bills, including fees, surcharges, and rate adjustments. Cutting out the intermediary on energy purchasing, up to $420 million in savings. Right now, utility companies act as intermediaries when Massachusetts buys clean energy, and they collect a fee for that role. This bill lets the state negotiate those contracts directly, cutting out the fee and saving ratepayers up to $420 million. Evening out seasonal price spikes, $780 million in savings. Energy prices for customers on basic service contracts are currently locked in every 6 months, which can cause sudden jumps in what residents pay. The bill gives regulators more flexibility in how and when prices are set, which is expected to save ratepayers $780 million. Reviewing hidden charges that spike during peak months, $750 million in savings. Bills often include separate reconciling charges that aren't reviewed consistently. The bill requires regulators to reform these charges, particularly ones that spike during high demand months, which will save residents an estimated $750 million. Investigating markups on electric bills, up to $1 billion in savings. A new state investigation will examine whether customers have been overcharged when utilities didn't actively shop for the best electricity rates. Between 2015 and 2024, Massachusetts customers may have paid an estimated $3.4 billion more than necessary. This investigation could lead to savings of up to $1 billion, or roughly $12 a month for a typical household. Cracking down on predatory energy suppliers, more than $650 million in savings. So-called competitive energy suppliers have used aggressive sales tactics to lure customers in with low introductory rates, only to sharply raise prices later. Over the past decade, customers who switched to these suppliers paid an estimated $738.7 million more than if they'd simply stayed with their regular utility. The bill strengthens consumer protections and enforcement to save ratepayers a projected $650 million. Helping utilities pay down debt without passing it to customers, up to $7.1 billion in savings. The bill allows utility companies to finance certain costs, like those from storm recovery and grid upgrades, at lower interest rates instead of borrowing at higher costs and passing those costs on to residents. This alone could save ratepayers up to $7.1 billion over 10 years. Streamlining the gas pipe repair program, $1.46 billion in savings. The Gas System Enhancement Plan, a program meant to incentivize utilities to fix aging, leak-prone gas pipes, has ballooned in cost, making up an estimated 8 to 11% of a typical gas bill, while allowing companies to skip standard cost reviews. The bill narrows the program to focus only on pipes that actually need repair, phases it out by 2030, and restores normal oversight, saving ratepayers an estimated $1.46 billion. Making solar and clean energy more affordable up front, $540 million in savings. For homeowners who want to install solar panels or battery storage but can't afford the upfront cost, the bill creates a way to finance that equipment through their utility bill over time. By doing so, it potentially saves consumers $540 million as more households take advantage of it. Cutting red tape in energy planning, $1.7 billion in savings. Utility companies currently plan infrastructure projects through multiple disconnected approval processes, which can overwhelm regulators and often lead to duplicated or unnecessary spending. The bill requires a single, streamlined planning process, helping avoid wasteful projects and saving residents an estimated $1.7 billion. Strengthening the MassSave program. The legislation strengthens the MassSave program, which helps residents weatherize homes and upgrade to energy-efficient equipment by making it more accountable and effective. The bill caps the program's administrative spending, removes a requirement that utility companies automatically receive bonus payments, and creates a new oversight board to keep the program focused on results. Protecting Massachusetts' climate leadership. The bill preserves the state's commitment to clean energy by adjusting the pace of certain renewable energy purchasing requirements to reflect federal setbacks to offshore wind, supporting renewable natural gas made from food and organic waste, and allowing outside investment in upgrading the electric grid to handle growing demand. Having passed both chambers of the legislature, the bill will now go through a reconciliation process to resolve differences before a final version is sent to the governor. I Will Bring the DA's Office Back to Transparency by Rachel Rollins. In 2018, I ran for district attorney with no political sponsor and no permission from anyone. The people who decide these races, before voters get a say, decided early that I was not qualified for the job and not viable in the field. And they were not shy about saying it. The Suffolk County voted. What arrived was not a narrow win handed down by an endorsement or the political elite. It was a mandate built at doors and kitchen tables and church basements by people who had been told for far too long that this office was not theirs to shape. We built an office around that mandate. We collected data and published it. We wrote our policies down so the public could read them and hold us to them. we brought in researchers who could tell us honestly whether what we were doing worked, including on misdemeanor prosecution, where the evidence showed that charging certain nonviolent cases made future crime more likely rather than less. We created the first discharge integrity team in any prosecutor's office in the country, with a community member seated on it, so that when police used deadly or excessive force, there was a process the public could see. Homicides fell to a 20-year low. We also went to court against the federal government. When ICE agents began terrorizing our community during the first Trump administration, I took them to court and sued them with my colleague in Middlesex County. A federal judge ordered the practice stopped. A courthouse only functions if a witness to a shooting, a person seeking a restraining order, or a worker owed their wages can walk through the door without calculating the risk. That was true in 2019. It is more true today. I left to serve as United States Attorney only after asking for and receiving assurances that this important work would continue. It did not. What voters built in 2018 was undone by appointment, which is the oldest way there is to take something back from people without asking them. Within days, the research partnerships were severed and the published data stopped. The discharge integrity team was disbanded. 4 years later, the office still has no written protocol governing officer-involved shootings. Meetings about homicides in our neighborhoods are held by invitation only. Relationships with the police departments this office depends on have frayed in public. You can measure the cost. Roughly 1,500 homicides remain unsolved, some dating to 1960, and not one prosecutor is currently assigned specifically to clearing those cases. I'm sorry, that's all we have time for today.